This podcast is sponsored by Sonos. Sonos is offering the listeners of Dungeons & Demogorgons 10% off one order of $2,500 or less for any product on Sonos.com. This offer is available for a limited time only and cannot be combined with other discounts or promotions. Use the promo code STRANGER10, capital STRANGER10 at Sonos.com to receive this offer.
It's total carnage at the Hawkins lab as the Demogorgon sweep through the facility, killing nearly everyone. Mike and Joyce sedate Will after realizing the shadow monster is using him to locate the survivors. The power goes out and the facility goes into lockdown. Bob is the only one with the computer skills necessary to reboot the lab's computers and disable the security locks.
He manages to do exactly that in heroic fashion, allowing Hopper, Joyce, Will, and Mike to escape. Bob dies in the attempt, torn apart by the creatures, devastating Joyce. Jonathan, Nancy, Steve, Lucas, Dustin, and Max arrive simultaneously and help the others escape in the vehicles.
Our combined team decides to interrogate Will in Joyce's shed, disguising the inside so the shadow monster won't know where they are at. Will manages to communicate to his friends and family by tapping Morse code with his fingers without the shadow monster knowing. He tells them their only hope is to close the gate.
However, Joyce's phone rings and Will recognizes the sound. The shadow monster dispatches its Demogorgons to the scene, and things look grim for the survivors. Suddenly, the monsters are silenced, and in walks Jane to save the day. Welcome to Dungeons & Demogorgons, the officially unofficial podcast for Stranger Things on Netflix. I'm Jim.
I'm Aaron.
And we just got done watching Season 2, Episode 8, titled Chapter 8, The Mind Flayer. We get a name for this thing, finally. We can stop calling it the Shadow Monster like we did in the intro.
Oh, call it
the Mind Flayer.
I don't know. I think I like the Shadow Monster.
I mean, it's descriptive.
It's an imperfect metaphor. Shadow Monster is what the thing is.
It's not a metaphor. It's an analogy.
You know what? I'm going to go with Shadow Monster until it says, please call me Mind Flayer. And I'm going with the Jane 11 rule. What do you think of the episode?
I thought it was great. I'm super happy to be back in Hawkins, picking up where we left off in episode 6, and in awesome fashion. Like, everything just kicked right back into gear for me.
Yeah, I mean,
getting the group back together, like, that's what I wanted. That's what I wanted for the final climactic battle. Get the entire group back together, fighting as a unit against this monster, the Mind Flayer.
Yeah, I agree. Plus, this was the most emotion, I think, that the season has brought. You know, Bob's death, I was, I don't know who felt it more, me or Joyce. I really got attached to Bob the Brain, and I felt like that they did some retrospective character building, which would,
a little bit,
you know, like we talk shit about in The Walking Dead all the time, but like Bob is already a great character. In fact,
he was, yeah.
I said at the beginning of this episode, or as he was heroically saving the day, I'm like, well, he's too good of a character to die. And then I realized, shit, he's such a great character that killing him would actually mean something.
Yeah, that's exactly why he has to die.
But I like how Mike eulogized him. We find out that he was the founder of the Hawkins AV Club, which brought these boys together. And he was the one that kind of funded it. And
he taught Mr. Clark everything he knew.
Everything he knew. That's pretty cool.
So I'm guessing he was not Mr. Clark's teacher. He was a student along with Mr. Clark, right?
Yeah.
Because Mr. Clark seems to be about Bob's age.
Yeah. But, this is the thing is like, this is the age, like, computers were a very new thing. Mm-hmm. So, like, you know, you had these nerds, like, you know, like, obviously Bob the Brain and Mr. Clark were probably nerds that went to Hawkins. Mm-hmm. But, like, you know, the Radio Shack era and the computer era, like, I could see that, like, yeah, they're both nerds, but Bob brought Clark along in the ways of the Tandy.
Yeah,
and the GW Basic and whatever the hell they were using there.
Honestly, the eulogy is so perfect because, obviously, Sean Astin was a character in The Goonies. He was Mikey. And he kind of taught everybody everything they knew about the 80s, right?
Yeah.
Like, he is iconic 80s, and to eulogize him in this way as he's killed off in the series, I thought was really, really nice.
Yeah, no, it's great. And then, like, I got really, I felt a lot of emotion when everyone was trying to make this connection to Will, and they're talking about all these beautiful experiences they've had, you know, at various ages. Like, I really got a lump in my throat when, like, Mike was talking about their first day in kindergarten.
Yeah.
And then when Jane walks in mm-hmm. and saves the day, it's like, yeah, I fucking couldn't handle it. it's so good. It's I mean, shit, I want to say it's my favorite episode, but there's still one to go, and they've all been really good in my book. Now, did you, after, like, everything fell right back, like, you know, it seemed like you were really concerned about the momentum loss. Do you not mind last episode more now that you saw that, like, the episode got right back into the swing of things, or do you still think
I still think the episode could have been done better. It could have been intertwined into the plot that we were seeing at Hawkins, and it would have flowed better, in my opinion. But,
yeah.
You know, it didn't kill the end of this season for me, certainly. Like, I'm right back in it now. And now that Elle's back with the group, everything is A-okay.
What's the fate of Dr. Paul Reiser?
Good question. So the last we see of him, he's shouting run to Bob, right?
Yeah.
And watching the monitors.
And I've got to say, when he started, quote-unquote, guiding Bob, I'm like, fucking evil Dr. Paul Reiser. He's going to lock him in the lab, and the Demogorgons are going to gangbang him and impregnate him, and he's gonna be filed into, like, this hermetically sealed glass coffin, and evil Dr. Paul Reiser is going to leave in a helicopter twirling his non-existent mustache.
Uh-huh.
But I think I don't see... I don't know why he would die, because it looks like the Demogorgons were all concentrated on the people leaving. So maybe he mm-hmm. maybe he can survive. On the other hand, he'd be the only one left in that facility alive.
Right. Here's the thing. If evil Dr. Paul Reiser comes mm-hmm. back, do not trust him, because he's probably under the power of the Mind Flayer. Right.
Yeah.
He's probably been willed, and it's some kind of ploy. Do not fucking trust Paul Reiser from here on out.
Yeah.
If you ever thought he was a good guy, you know for sure that he's not now.
But yeah, like, there was some grisly shit in that lab. Like, those Demogorgons were the Demodogs, as Dustin dubbed them, are not fucking around.
No, especially what they did to poor Bob.
Oh, yeah, Bob died hard.
They ripped him to pieces.
It reminded me a lot of some of the early deaths on The Walking Dead, where just people died screaming.
Yeah.
And also, like, I thought... Because, like, okay, Hopper's been to Nam. He knows how to run that M16, and he's swinging up in slow motion. And, like, the Demogorgon was on Bob, but he hadn't quite done fatal damage. And, like, Hopper's going to save the day,
mm-hmm.
but he didn't.
He would have, I think, but the Demogorgons...
There's just too many of them.
Yeah. He can't stop them.
Like, he could have stopped the one, maybe. It's unclear to me how gunfire affects the Demogorgons, if at all.
Yeah, it seems not very much.
Like, I don't understand whether they're, like, unusually tough or armored, or
mm-hmm. maybe have some kind of healing powers.
What Hopper really needed was a flamethrower. Yeah. Now, I don't think that would have helped Bob much.
No.
God damn. I can't. They killed Bob. Because I was just thinking, like, I could see him being a character going forward.
Mm-hmm.
But it's not going to happen.
Yeah, so, I mean, he died in heroic fashion, as we mentioned.
It's the best you can ask, yeah.
It's the Jurassic Park gambit. And I know that Jurassic Park is not of the era, as far as the show goes. But it certainly was an influence here. Like, the old restore the power, reboot the computers operation, hold on to your butts.
Except for he was Samuel L. Jackson and Laura Dern all wrapped up. And the girl who knows Unix. When he reached for that power switch,
I expected an arm to drop down on his shoulder.
Yeah.
So total Jurassic Park thing there. But Bob the Brain did save the day with his basic powers, and I liked how, you know, he's not just an electronics wizard. He is also, I mean, he's just smart in every arena.
Yeah.
And I think, I guess I buy that. We mentioned that it may be a little bit of retconning that he was, you know, the founder of the AV club, but...
He works at Radio Shack in the 80s. I totally believe that.
Yeah. I mean, that's the thing. Radio Shack was a very different beast in the 80s. Radio Shack was the electronics tinkerer store, right? It was not RC cars and cell phones.
Right.
Which eventually probably led to its death.
Well, I mean, what led to its death is just... That tinker thing just kind of went away.
For a while, yeah, but they could have gotten the Arduino game. They could have gotten the 3D printing game. Like, they just didn't... They didn't jump on the things that the tinkerer crowd was jumping onto.
That's true.
At the right
time. Well, you know what, though? I think
they went more to the point.
there was like a 15-year gap between the death of the Radio Shack and then the arise of the maker culture.
Yeah.
If that had been a little closer together, they might have been able to pivot. And drones and all. Like there is a market now for these high-end technical things that you could put under one thing. But the other thing is like how with Fry's and Best Buy, and they're having their problems too because Amazon is the fucking massive mind flayer that's destroying them all.
Yeah.
I don't know that any brick and mortar is going to survive that doesn't, that, you know, there's a couple places that, like, if you need to try on something and take a picture of it and look it up on Amazon to order. Like, I would hate to be in a brick and mortar business right now.
Yeah, it's rough. And Radio Shack was a casualty. But back then, yeah, it was definitely more like, we're going to sell you capacitors and we're going to sell you little LCD screens and like all the stuff that you wanted as, or more to the point, radio components, right?
Right.
Transmitters and receivers and stuff like that that you just couldn't get anywhere else because there was no internet.
Yeah. And the fact that, you know, you didn't have just like these different types of nerds. It was like, that was kind of the interesting thing about the 70s and 80s that like, if you're a nerd, you just had this like broad band. You just assumed to have like, you know, like I thought Bob was a great description because he was into computers, he's into electronics, he's into gizmos, he's into cameras, he's just like, he is a junkie for this anything new in that arena, and he keeps up with it because he's passionate about it. And now he's dead.
He got killed for it.
And that's the thing. Like, I really like because you know, Hopper gets to shine so much.
Yeah,
and he's like, "Fuck yeah, I'll go flip some breakers." Mm-hmm. And he's like, "But you can't. You got to do the computers." Like, okay, teach me basic. And it's like,
luck.
Yeah, it's like it's just that's no how, like, you know, a man of action for the first time. Like, well, you can't play now. What wasn't clear to me is why wouldn't Hopper come with me? Because with him, I thought,
yeah.
Apparently, that's a Freudian slip. I am Bob. I wanted Hopper to come with me and be my boyfriend.
Yeah, but I don't know why he stays behind. I guess to guard Joyce and them.
It seems like that's the best of both worlds, right? You got the muscle, you got the brain. You got Jim the muscle and Bob the brain.
The problem is all they got's one muscle. And I feel like he thought it was more important to guard Will and Mike and Joyce and Riser.
But the thing is, yes, but the thing is if Bob fails, they're all fucked.
That's
Bob's
true.
Literally the only one that can, because I don't even think the evil Dr. Paul Reiser knew basic.
No, he said he didn't.
Right.
Yeah.
So like he's like if that mission fails and everything else is academic.
Here are the highlights coming up this week on Bald Move.
We've got lots of ongoing coverage this week, from book versus show comparisons for Hot D to the latest very special episode of Why is Mr. Feeny a Car? But there are a couple of main events this week you need to know about.
Firstly, we've got a brand new commission podcast out this Tuesday covering the Raid 2, sometimes subtitled Retaliation. If you're a fan of martial arts films, this is one you don't want to miss. Iko Uwais is a rising star in the action movie world, and it's easy to see why. Join us on Tuesday as we dive into the bigger, badder sequel to The Raid, try and figure out which is better.
Then on Thursday, we're covering the season finale of Hulu's excellent period drama, Shogun. We've been waiting all season to see what Toranaga Sama's plan is, or if he even has one. It all comes down to this, and we couldn't be more excited. Join us on Thursday for what's sure to be an epic Shogun season finale podcast, and we'll find out if we plan to cover any related materials.
You can find these and many other great podcasts by searching for Bald Move Pulp or Bald Move Prestige in your favorite podcast app. We're getting geared up for the 6th annual Summer Badass Fest. And while we're working on a slate of apex badass films to enjoy, we've got an early action-packed announcement to make.
Just like last year, we're kicking off Badass Season with a live movie watch and podcast recording. We've rented out a theater for connoisseurs of action films and Bald Move fans that just want to have a great time.
Unlike last year, this year's movie is top secret. Hush, hush. No hints, except it's incredibly badass. It stars an absolute icon of the genre. We're willing to bet most of you haven't seen it, and it's going to be an incredible viewing experience with a packed house of Bald Movers.
Those of you who came to last year's screening of Total Recall know what a party it was. And those of you who didn't, now's your chance to experience it. Meet me and Jim. Order some custom movie-themed drinks at the theater's full bar. Then watch us record the full podcast for the movie. We reserved a venue over twice the size as last year, but seating is still limited.
It's happening Friday, June 21st at 7 p.m. in our hometown of Cincinnati. Get full details and buy tickets at baldmove.com/live.
Cincinnati's actually a pretty great city to visit, and we've got lots of details for side adventures on our event page as well. The Reds are playing the Boston Red Sox in their fantastic Riverside Stadium. The thrills of Kings Island just minutes away, and I'll be leading a kayak trip down the scenic Little Miami River on Saturday.
Again, get full details and get your tickets now on our Badass Fest 6 page at baldmove.com/live.
Bob is a basic wizard. He gets in there and in the span of 10 seconds has written a script to totally reboot all of these systems.
I wish they'd have spent a little bit. Like, I didn't have to get Mr. Robot with it, but, like, I mean, Bob was as typing as fast as, like, a fucking, you know, 9600 baud modem. Like,
yeah, he was, but at the same time, like, if you know all the commands that reboot it, because I assume I didn't go back and, like, analyze the screen or anything, but I assume he's just typing in like a standard batch script or whatever to run commands in a specific order,
right?
Not like programming a system.
Yeah, but I guess what to be more realistic, he would actually look at the code, scan through it, find out where it's unlocking. But on the other hand, it looks like all he really did. It's just weird because
he's just writing a script to do things in a certain order.
But it then eventually loaded up this, like, not a GUI, but a command, like, interface where he's entering numbers. And that, to me, it seems like all he did is, like, boot and then went to DOS prompt and ran, you know, lockcontrols.exe.
Right.
So, like, I don't know. Whatever.
But certainly Hopper or Riser could not have done that.
No. I just wish. It's one of those things, like, I wish they had done a little bit of and decided which way they wanted to go and keep it, like, consistent. Again, I don't need Mr. Robot, but, you know.
Yeah, it's tough being a nerd watching these nerdy
it
things.
Is, especially nerd of the era, because, like, that's the shit. I was all up in that stuff. So
the Demogorgons got a hell of a meal here. They're definitely going to molt, right?
I mean,
the one we saw
cheap
didn't
shot at Bob's portly nature.
Well,
honestly,
no, I mean, they eat a cat and you molt. Now it's time to
they feasted on a whole facility full of strapping Marines and young nurses and
potential
Bob's
risers.
Brains and maybe you're right, you know, risers. He's a man witch himself.
But the somewhat confusing thing is the one we see later on that Elle kills or that Jane kills, is not evolved beyond what it was, beyond the demo dog, right? So
it makes sense that they're all kind of like they're not all molting in unison.
Yeah, and well, we haven't seen one molt yet. Yeah. So I assume that off screen during between 8 and 9, they're probably going to molt.
Yeah, they'll be full-fledged Demogorgons.
Yeah.
Although I don't know, like,
or close to it.
Why wouldn't Elle have killed all the Demogorgons that were outside? It seems like
maybe
she, like they all went quiet.
Yeah.
The other thing is, before we go to Bob, is, like, we didn't give him all of his moments of awesome. He also was able to, like, the herd the Demogorgons using the sprinkler system.
Yep. Yeah.
Yeah.
He could have saved himself if he was in Riser's position.
Mm.
If there were two Bobs.
Yeah.
He would have gotten out of there.
Yeah, I think so.
You drop a broom, you just turn on another sprinkler. No problem.
Yeah. Let's talk about the stuff with Dustin and Lucas, because I thought that was pretty strong, too. Like, Dustin, because he's hung out with Steve, understands something that even Lucas doesn't, that Lucas has essentially won the war, he's won the love triangle.
Yeah.
That there is there's genuine electricity between himself and Max.
Yeah, for sure.
Which I thought was cool. I also liked their increasingly petty arguments that was bleeding over into serious stuff. Like, you know, they're having this argument about who broke the rule of law and, you know, which was a more technical violation of it than, like, when Dustin's trying to do his long-winded analogy about the mind flayer, you know, Lucas is in, it's not a metaphor, it's an analogy.
Uh-huh.
And then, yeah, that's the thing, like, I like that the adults were kind of calling, like, look, this is just a fucking game.
Yeah.
Like, oh, okay, well, how do you defeat it? Well, you use our army of zombies because they don't have brains. Like,
it's just a fucking game.
Yeah. So they didn't have, I mean, and honestly, they had no solution. They had to go, you know, Will was the one that had the solution, and Elle had the, or Jane had the power to do it.
Yeah.
And then.
And I love that scene because every time they slap a monster manual down on the table,
yeah.
I feel a little tingle.
Yeah, it's cool.
It's really awesome.
Thanks goes to Sonos because they've essentially sponsored the season 2 run of Stranger Things, and that was very kind of them, and we're going to talk about their product.
I don't think they did it for kindness, I think.
Well, yes.
They probably did it because they want you to buy their admittedly good products.
They have an ulterior motive. They want to pawn off this superior audio equipment to the unsuspecting public masses. We're going to make you suspecting. You're going to suspect it of high quality gear. And the other thing I like about Sonos is increasing in this podcast advertising game, we're getting. It used to be like, you know, you just say whatever you want, like, you know, enjoy the product and have your own review. And like, as the years have gone by, I feel like I'm being put in more and more handcuffs about, you know, like, you got to hit these talking points and make sure you don't say this and blah, this expires. And Sonos is just like, talk about your experiences with our product.
Yeah.
And that's confident. That's confident. And I'll even tell you my experience with the Sonos product. You open it up, exquisite packaging.
Mm-hmm.
The devices look amazing. You plug them in the wall, you download the app, and setup is complete. There'll be a few more steps that the app will walk you through. It's never got hung up. I've never had to call support. Again, I grew up in the Radio Shack age, so that might not be impressive, but I'm telling you, it's foolproof.
Yeah.
And it sounds great. The one we're talking about today is literally the one, Sonos One, because they're getting into the voice-activated, voice-responsive, the Alexa, the Google at Home kind of space.
I can't tell you how convenient that is.
It really
is. When you're cooking and you have fish juice covered head to toe
right.
on your body and you don't want to fuck your phone up.
Or like
you just talk to it.
You're playing video. I'm playing a video game and I want to know what time it is. Or I want to know like you said, setting timers. It's like
yeah.
there's all kinds of things. I'm not sure what you will use it for, mm-hmm. but I'm sure you will find a use because this is the fucking Star Trek future. This is,
yeah.
I don't have a matter replicator yet, but like, Sonos has got the, Earl Grey hot part down.
They do.
Somebody else needs to get on the replicator part, but like, as soon as they're ready to go, man,
uh-huh.
and this is the future. You want to know a random fact, like, you know, how far away is the Earth from the moon, or, you know, I don't know how much does the Earth weigh, or stuff, shit like that. It's when does the movie start?
Yeah.
Lots of cool stuff like that. Setting up reminders and calendars, appointments, completely hand-free. And, you know, I know some people have had different jaded experiences when they use their phone assistant or,
mm-hmm.
you know, what is like Siri or OK Google. But whatever the technology. See? My phone. See? See? This is what I'm talking about. This shit right here. It's trying to be my faithful servant. Can you? I don't know if you can. Sonos can, because whatever sound system they're using, like, the voice technology is just so much better than the stuff I've used in my phone.
Yeah.
So
maybe it's the quality of the sound itself, because there are a lot of devices that will do this voice stuff, but
yeah.
not very many of them are really high-quality audio gear as well.
And the fact that this is such an amazing-sounding piece of equipment and a super small package makes it all the sweeter. And again, don't take our word for it. You know, you search for reviews on these Sonos ones, and they're just all glowing.
They are.
This is high-end gear that looks great and sounds great and does exactly what it says it's going to do on the tin. So how can they take advantage of the special offer Sonos is extending them, Jim?
That offer is right now you can get 10% off one order of $2,500 or less for any product on Sonos.com. It's available for a limited time only. Can't be combined with other discounts or promotions. But if you go to Sonos.com and you use the promo code STRANGER10 in all capital letters, STRANGER10 at Sonos.com, you will receive the offer.
By the way, those offer codes are always in the show notes. So if you're driving down the road, don't take your hands off the wheel.
Yeah.
If you had a Sonos in your car, you could say, hey, Sonos, remind me. Or,
yeah.
hey, Alexa, remind me to blah, blah, blah.
Give me that sweet offer.
But just you know, keep your hands on the wheel. Wait till you get home. Look at the show notes. And the link and the promo code's right there. And then Mike is still being an unconscionable dick to Max. Like, I don't even get it. Like, why do you have to, in this moment, assert that just because you know the truth, you're not in our party?
Yeah.
Like, why? I mean, I've been in kid groups where, hell, I've been in adult groups where, like, you know, we've got a set thing and we do this thing and then someone wants to bring in two more and I'm like, well, okay, now we're bringing two more and, like, now we're, our one party is split into two. This isn't as much fun as we were having. And I get it, but, like, damn, Mike.
Yeah, no, Mike's being a shit here, but I'm hoping now that Elle is back, he can cool his jets a bit. And actually get on board with a new party member.
Yeah.
Have a couple new party members.
Where does it stop? Because, like, you know, 4 seasons from now, we're going to have 16 kids. That's not even a party anymore. That
stops when they graduate. Like, when they go off to college.
Yeah. It's like when you get, like, where your friend group can no longer sit at one table at fucking Applebee's or Steak and Shake. Like, you're not
time
even
to thin the herd.
Yeah. You're not. You either break up into 2 separate groups or you're kind of fucked.
Yeah, and they got a pretty big group now. I assume season 3 we can expect, like, Steve and Nancy and Jonathan to be hanging out with them too, right? I mean, I know there's a pretty big age gap, but come on. You've been through some shit together.
I don't know. I mean, I think,
like,
there's,
like Murray says, you got that oh-so-powerful trauma, shared trauma.
I think if they're going to do that, they need a time jump. They need a flat. They need and which that might not be a bad idea because how long can you keep...
But Nancy's gone for sure. In a time jump, she's going to college.
Uh-huh. But I'm saying like Stephen King's It time jump. Like 20 years, they're all like, they're now
holy
like you
shit.
Just recast everybody and you bring them back to Hawkins for some, some crazy reason that's happening in the future.
Yeah, I don't see that happening in the four or five seasons we're going to get. No.
Well, it's an idea for a spinoff.
There you go.
And I'd like to see how that would survive and change. And that was one of the kind of cool things, I guess, about It. And I'm looking forward to seeing in the movies when they come back as adults. Because, like, you know, the things that make it special are the children. Mm-hmm. And then how do you retain those characters but still recognize that they've grown up and they've changed and they've matured and they're different people and et cetera, et cetera.
We're about 10 weeks out from House of the Dragon Season 2, and it's time to prepare for war.
Which in our case means, well, watching a lot of Hot D and reading a lot of Fire and Blood.
Each week between now and June 16th, Maester Anthony and his co-host Steve are hosting a watch of each episode of Hot D Season 1. And then me and Jim are going to host a discussion of the differences between the events on that episode and how they're recounted in George R.R. Martin's historical tome, Fire and Blood.
That's right, I've resorted to reading dragon books. God help us all. We'll see if my fresh eyes add any new insights or predictions into Season 2.
Arm yourselves with all the lore you can for the battles ahead. House of the Dragon returns June 16th, but we've got you covered until then.
Check out all of our upcoming Hot D coverage on the Hot D feed or on Bald Move Pulp, available wherever you listen to podcasts.
Hey, it's time for another season of Why is Mr. Feeny a Car? The premise is simple. A Gen Xer and a millennial watch old 80s action TV to see what still works and what doesn't. In previous seasons, we've done podcasts for Knight Rider, Airwolf, MacGyver, A-Team, and more. However, this year we're doing a very special season of Feeny. We're going back and reviewing the very special episodes of 80s and 90s sitcoms. Come cringe along with us as Hollywood tries to warn our families of the dangers of underage smoking, drug abuse, alcoholism, eating disorders, and much more. We start out with the episode of Boy Meets World where a high school kid gets sucked into a cult. Worlds collide as the Mr. Feeny finally makes an appearance on Why is Mr. Feeny a Car? Join me and my buddy Jay each week for episodes full of nostalgia and secondhand embarrassment. And don't worry, if Very Special isn't your speed, we've also got some all-time classic Knight Rider episodes to close the season with. Find Why is Mr. Feeny a Car? Each Wednesday on Bald Move Pulp, starting April 3rd.
FX is adapting James Clavell's best-selling novel, Shogun, into a 10-part miniseries this spring. Set in the Shogunate period of Japan at the turn of the 15th century, Shogun depicts the rise of a feudal lord to Shogun, as seen through the eyes of a shipwrecked English sailor.
It's loosely based on the real-life exploits of William Adams and Tokugawa Ieyasu.
Shogun has already been successfully adapted back in 1980 with a widely acclaimed miniseries starring Richard Chamberlain, featuring intricate plots, political scheming, complex characters, and thrilling action. This time, husband and wife team Justin Marks and Rachel Kondo try to recapture the successes of the novel and early adaptations while increasing the levels of historical and cultural accuracy that are often perceived as flaws of this and similar works.
Starring Hiroyuki Sanada from The Last Samurai, Mortal Kombat, and John Wick 4, with Cosmo Jarvis of Peaky Blinders, Raised by Wolves, etc., joining the truly massive cast required to bring this complex world to life. Join Aaron and I each week as we deep dive into each episode, uncovering the mysteries, the intrigue, and the glory of Shogun.
Shogun premieres on FX Hulu Tuesday, February 27th, with a two-part debut. Our podcast will release each Thursday thereafter. Get our Shogun coverage by searching for Bald Move Prestige in your favorite podcast app.
Have you exhausted your Dustin and Lucas stuff?
No, go ahead. No. If you've got some more.
Oh no, I was going to take it in a different direction.
Then please do that.
The scene with Will, where they strap him down in the shed and they question him, or they try and appeal to the real Will inside this body. So I thought this was a pretty incredible scene, and I. Like, the performance that Schnapp, I forget his first name, but this kid who plays Will gives is really, really powerful. When he's screaming, "Let me go, let me go."
Yeah.
How many fucking times did this kid have to do that scene?
I don't know.
Because I can't imagine doing it more than once.
I hope they had throat lozenges for him.
Yeah.
And then how, like, it looked like they were getting through and how deflating it was when, after all that was done, he just still goes back to "let me go."
Yeah.
And they did, I don't know if it's digital manipulation or is the child actor doing it, but, like, they add a little bit of, shadow monster to his voice.
Uh-huh.
But then they found the Morse code then, which was...
Yeah. And we find out a couple of cool things in that scene. They built Castle Byers the night that their dad left.
Right.
Him and Jonathan went out in the woods and built that. Well, that was pretty cool.
Yeah.
And of course...
And the origins of his artistic ability, his mom getting him...
a giant box of crayons.
For his 8th birthday, where everybody else got Star Wars toys, and that was, that was cool.
Yeah. And then, finding this way to communicate without the knowledge of the Mind Flayer shadow monster.
Throw on some Clash.
It makes perfect sense. Like AV Club for the win.
Yeah, know? Right.
These kids all immediately recognize, oh, that's Morse code. I thought that was cool.
Yeah, and that's another thing that you can only really do in this time period. Because I was talking about in our season one coverage, like I had the walkie-talkies that had the, like, that in fact, I'm pretty sure it's the exact same Radio Shack brand where they had that steel plate that was bolted to the front that had all the different
letters,
codes. Yeah. And, like, my, you know, sometimes just for shits and grins, we would try to communicate using Morse code.
Mm-hmm.
Like, nowadays, like, I guess kids would just do encryption, but you couldn't speak to someone strapped to a thing and, you know, RSA 256.
No, you can't.
You know, you can't. It just doesn't work.
Fingers don't move fast enough for
it's
that.
Just like, people are increasingly realize what a narrative crutch it was to have voicemail and answering machines.
Yeah.
That you could, like, have this exposition very neat and efficient and tidy, and that just doesn't fucking exist anymore.
Yeah, you can get some delayed text.
Or like the absence of cell phones added like some mystery and urgency and stuff that doesn't exist
and
anymore.
And a disconnect, yeah.
Exactly.
Sense of isolation.
This is a story that you could only kind of tell in this little 5 to 10 year gap.
Yeah, no, it's super cool. I feel bad for Joyce, though. She definitely needs a new phone now that Nancy smashed it on the ground and pulled it out of the wall.
Yeah.
How many phones will she go through before the end of the show?
You know, the one thing... That reminded me of, like, when they were redressing the shed. I'm like, this is so stupid. This is so much harder than just putting a fucking hood over the kid's head.
Uh-huh.
But then when I saw what they did with it, I immediately, like, well, yeah, but...
They're trying to connect with him on a personal level.
And the performance that they were able to get with them all around and Will reacting would be a shadow of itself if he's just strapped in with a hood over his head.
And it makes sense. I mean, you want to look the kid in the eyes, right?
Yeah.
You're trying to
make
that
connection.
You're
appealing to his humanity.
Yeah.
You're trying to punch through the shadow monster.
Yeah,
Mind Flayer
they just
wall.
Didn't think about the phone.
Yeah.
It's too bad.
Yep.
And then that's it. I mean, Jane comes in, saves the day, snaps a bunch of Demogorgon necks.
Yeah, the one thing we didn't talk about...
I wonder, because it feels like now that Jane's there, it's like, how are they going to lose? Because the Shadow Monster is many things, but it doesn't seem like it has any way to really interact with the world other than
it's just
these
Will.
It's Demogorgon pets.
Yeah, could it trick them somehow with Will? I mean, they're on to that. They're wise to it.
Or is it going to do, like, battle with Jane on the astral plane?
Maybe, yeah.
Is Jane going to get vaporized again? And we're gonna, I mean, I wonder... Because as you yourself said, like, how the fuck do they wrap this thing up in...
A single episode.
A single episode. Now, there's
I mean,
a chance
you close
that...
the gate, but what is that going to do?
There's a chance now that they know they've got some runway with Netflix that they, it's just a cliffhanger.
Maybe.
I don't know what I'd how I'd feel about that.
I think they need to close the gate, and we realize, oh, that didn't necessarily do the whole
trick. Or it's going to slow, but not... I guess they could do another thing where, like, maybe you think things are okay, but then, you know, Will's coughing up a... slug, or maybe it's Hopper's turn to cough up something because he's breathing a lot of Shadow Monster aerial sperm or whatever the hell it is.
Yeah, he was. I think at this point, my theory on the JVC is probably dead. I don't think it's going to help him to try and go in there with a video recorder and get some kind of evidence.
Hmm.
I mean, maybe they take it for fun. Like Jonathan's like, right. Oh, this would be cool to photograph.
Right.
Let me get that JVC. But closing this gate... I don't know how you do it.
Yeah.
Like, I mean, L's got to try it. L's the only one who possibly could.
Surely the lab has, because like Riser had this line. I also like the fact that we just completely abandoned. We just made a conscious decision that we're never going to learn Dr. Paul Reiser's name.
It's I know Paul his Reiser. Name. I'm not it, telling it.
Oh, okay. Well, I it's Dr. Paul Reiser. Shut up. I got so Twitter paid with that. I forgot.
The gate.
Oh,
the L in
yeah,
the gate.
Like he has a line where like it's not like they haven't tried closing it.
Yeah.
So it's going to be something.
And it's huge now. We saw.
Oh, yeah.
It's stories high at this point.
Yeah.
How do you close that thing?
It's going to be. I wonder if it's going to be like Will and Jane coming together because like Will is caught between the two worlds like that 3D Viewmaster and Jane is able to enter into that world psychically. I wonder if they're going to have to like somehow. Merge or like mind meld or some kind of crazy 80s science fiction idea.
Yeah, I'm honestly willing to follow them pretty much wherever they go on this one. So I'm excited to see what's next.
One thing that keep bugging me is whenever they stick a needle in Will's arm, I know they're using those like little retractable needles.
Yeah.
But it's like 3 inches long and little Will's noodle arm's about an inch and a half. They're either sticking him right through the bone or right... like I keep on thinking that this needle is going to come out the other side and just, you know, it's like it's missing. It's missing. Have you guys never heard of like a fucking butterfly needle or like it's, you know.
It is a little deep.
I don't know why you need a 3-inch needle on this thing. And also, how the hell does Joyce, did I miss some backstory in season one where she used to be a nurse? Because she's administering medication, which, you know, knocking people out, they pay anesthesiologists a lot of money to be able to know, like, okay, this kid's this tall, and he's this weight heavy, and he's got this metabolism. And
pretty diminutive kid here. You might want to be careful.
Yeah.
That's the thing. Here's the problem with possessing a diminutive 11-year-old boy is he can be held down, restrained, and knocked out.
Right.
Like, if you possessed Hopper, it'd be a little bit harder.
Yeah, I would not want to try to restrain Hopper.
No.
I mean, the thing about, like, yeah, you can strain a young boy without killing them. I mean, the thing, it's super psychologically effective, but, like, try to restrain Hopper without killing him.
Yeah.
Good fucking, especially this group.
Mm-hmm.
Like,
what's Riser going to do, grab him?
Yeah, or Bob.
He'll get thrown down this
flight
of stairs.
Like, you might know basic Bob, but I think Hopper could just put you in orbit. So, good luck with that.
The one scene we didn't talk about yet is the stuff with Billy, which is frightening.
Oh, shit, yeah.
Yeah, so there's a scene where we understand why Billy is the way he is,
and
essentially.
And why he treats his sister like that. Like, his dad trying to brute force this step family together is just tearing it apart.
Yeah, it's disgusting. Max's mom is obviously not cool with the way he's treating his son, but she's too cool for me. Like, she needs to be a little less cool with this.
Right.
And tell this guy, look, I'm not cool with the way you treat Billy.
And it's adding this tragic element that, like, I wonder if this guy has been violent and angry, and she's like, well, we just need a change of scenery.
Right.
And now she's in Indiana, and they're away from there. And it's, yeah, like, there's... Mm-hmm. It's funny because you mentioned how they did a poor job of establishing Callie's gang, and yet, like, they're able to tap in and with very efficient scenes show you everything that's wrong with Billy and Max's family.
Yeah.
In a way, I don't know. It's really hard to shorthand character development, but you know enough about family dynamics if you've watched any kind of television to know that, like, this shit's bad. This is toxic.
Oh, yeah. And, I mean, this is not the way to teach someone to be a good, kind brother, as he says.
And what's going to happen, like, what I'm afraid is going to happen is Billy's going to show up after everything's said and done, and what is Max going to say to explain herself?
Yeah, if she didn't believe Lucas, there's no way Billy believes her.
Right.
I mean, she could take that... strap that Demogorgon to her back and show him that.
The only thing that Max has got going for is that I presume she have Hopper. Like, I would like to see Billy swing on Hopper.
Mm-hmm.
No, seriously, I'd like to see that. That would be hilarious.
I don't think it'd go so well for him.
But, yeah, I don't know. I'm curious to see how much they'll wrap up and how much they'll punt the next season.
Yeah. All right. Maybe we should get back to the end of the marathon.
Yeah, once again, StrangerThingsAtBaldMove.com for feedback on the season 2 wrap-up podcast we'll be having in this week or next. I'm not sure if we've actually scheduled that. I guess it depends on how much feedback we got in our schedule. But we're mm-hmm. definitely going to do one. You're also, if you go to the forums.baldmove.com, there is a show thread for every episode on the forums, so you can keep up at your own pace and contribute there. Then also, if you want to keep up with our marathon and see when we do schedule the wrap-up podcast where we consider the season 2 as a whole and maybe look forward to season 3, baldmove.com, check that out, or go on our social media presence, which I think those are all linked at baldmove.com. Just go to baldmove.com, choose your own adventure.
It's a pretty cool place.
You'll figure it out. It's a website. This is not 1984. you know how this stuff works. Yeah, let's get back into the episode, Jim.